give a warm welcome to our speaker tonight, Carlos from the Oceanfront Men's Meeting Home Group.
Thank you.
Thanks.
My name is Carlos and I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Carlos.
And contrary to belief, because they see me at the Oceanfront Men's Meeting all the time, my home group is the Bayside Sharing today, Tuesday night, 8 o'clock at Virginia Beach. And you know, before you even start, I gotta tell you thank you, and I mean that. Thank David for asking, and the group for having me, because I haven't spoken in a while, and thinking about it, and going through a lot of stuff, you know, just going through my life. My sobriety date is March 25th, 1985, and I can't tell you about the overwhelming gratitude just reflecting on the things that I've been through. Good, bad, indifferent, it doesn't matter. And inevitably, thanking my higher power, who I choose to call God, who I didn't want at one time. And I tell you, I have a strange tablet. I wake up in the morning and I say thank you, because I woke up. I grab my tablet to do my daily reflections. And there's something wrong with that tablet. Because every morning, instead of opening up to the page for that day, it opens up to January 1, and the title of it is A Miracle. And I am a miracle today. You know, we'll start with you know, what it was like. I'm the youngest of six. And I grew up in East Harlem in New York City, and there's a spread between my next brother and myself, quite a few years. And I think we were dysfunctional before they even came up with that word. Back then, drinking was like breathing. Everybody I knew drank, and drank alcoholically. I come from a Navy family, Marines and sailors, and give you an idea. And my mom used to say, your father's not an alcoholic, he only drinks on weekends, and you did not want to be around my house on a weekend. And my oldest brother fought in Korea with the Marines, came home. And it was alcohol, drugs, heroin, methadone, confounded cirrhosis in the gutters. My second brother was in the Navy in Korea, came home and inevitably dragged himself into a wet brain in a wheelchair. My third brother was in the Marines, fought in the first Lebanese crisis in 1958, was married, don't know what went with that marriage, and he had a good job, he was an electrician. And the next thing I know is, it was attempted suicides, mental institutions, drugs, you name it, and he's dead. And then I have a fourth brother who does not drink, and I wish the hell he did. But, you know, and that's just what normal to me was. You know, growing up as a kid, we had twin beds in my bedroom, and to watch my brother next to me in the next bed, detoxing heroin at the time and stuff. And you never knew what I would see. I could open up the door and see somebody with a needle in their arm. A gentleman in a nice suit, tie, white shirt, a gun and a badge. Walking down the street, there was a grocery store in the middle of the block. And I heard an explosion, and I look across the street, and here's a guy coming out of the grocery store with a massive hole in his chest, because he tried to hold up the grocery store, and a guy hit him with a shotgun. And that was normal for me growing up. And you know, there was no religious upbringing or anything, prayer in my house. In fact, my father at times cursed God, but they insisted that I go to Catholic school. They figured, you know, what happened with the other brothers, maybe there was a slight chance for me if they sent me to Catholic school. But I can tell you that didn't mean a hell of a lot. And it was okay. And I had Irish Christian brothers for teachers. And it was probably the only Puerto Rican in East Harlem that can do an Irish jig and a reel. You know? And I called it the Puerto Rican River Dance. And it was unbelievable. And I did well growing up. Although my father was the type that would come home, sit at the sofa, put on the news, and wouldn't even talk. And I don't blame my alcoholism on anybody but me. Nobody twisted my arm. They did the best that they could, you know. And one thing I learned in this program, and from that phrase, you know, you can't give what you ain't got. My dad ran away from home when he was a young kid, so he didn't have any parenting. So how could he parent? And I thank God for this program because it took care and settled that anger that I had and helped me to understand. You know, it really helped me to understand. And, you know, fast forward to my drinking. I did well in grade school. In fact, I graduated eighth grade with a 97.4 average. But before that, I had my first drink. I probably was about 12. And back then, they used to deliver the seltzer in the glass bottles with the dispenser. And my friend had some cream de coco, and it tasted like a chocolate soda. And it was okay. But that's all I had was one. But I can tell you that the next time I was together with a couple of friends, and I did not drink with my pinky in the air. I won't repeat the words that I said, but it was something to the effect of, let's get effed up. I drank for effect, and that's how I always drank. And I'm a garden variety juice head. Drugs are not a part of my disease. And because it scared me. I saw what drugs did with my family. So I thought that drinking was okay. And I never drank socially. It was always for effect. You know, when I graduated eighth grade, I qualified for two of the most prestigious schools in New York City, Bronx High School of Science and Stuyvesant High School. But over a six-pack, my eighth grade teacher and my father decided that I would go to Catholic school. And that just threw me for a loop, because I didn't want to go there. I knew what I wanted, but I wasn't allowed. Anyways, my grades went down the toilet. You know, school didn't mean much. And I couldn't wait to get out of school. And I tried enlisting in the Navy. And I drank during that period of time. But it had not accelerated. And I tried enlisting in the Navy, and I was going to quit school, and they said, nope, you have to have a high school diploma. So I said, okay, fine. And I finished school, graduated, and went right in the Navy, and I came down here. Went to A school, came down here, and I was in NOB. In fact, my ship is at the bottom of Charleston in the ocean, and my rate doesn't even exist anymore. But I can tell you that in the Navy it was okay, three hots and a cot. What do you do with your paycheck, man? Go out and drink. And I thought sailors was about drinking and fighting. And I traveled around the world. In fact, I carried Marines into combat from Morehead City. And it was anyways we stopped. I knew where all the bars were, you know, and inevitably I came back. And you know, there's things that happened during that time that I couldn't believe. I had missed my ship's movement, not because of my own fault, because the ship had pulled out when I was out on Christmas leave, and I was a brig chaser transporting prisoners to Portsmouth Brig. and I'll never forget it. I surrendered the prisoner to receiving. They called for a guard to take him from me. And I didn't recognize the name, but it's okay. The guy walks up, and it was a kid that I grew up with from infancy. He had a crazed look in his eyes. He didn't recognize me. And I can tell you what this disease does, because probably back then it was PTSD, they didn't have a name for it. And I saw him a couple years later, toothless, strung out. And then in 1999, somebody said, "You remind me of a guy," and I talked about it, and it turned out to be my friend. And I said, "So what about him?" And this was like from 1970 to 1999. He said, I tried to help him, and he just couldn't cut it, and he OD'd, and that's what this disease does, you know. And I am a miracle. I'm fortunate. You know, while I was in the Navy, I met my wife-to-be. You know, I always had good work ethics, because my dad always worked hard. He always worked hard. And, you know, he was a man of principles, although he couldn't express himself much. But I learned a lot. And I learned a lot in retrospect while I'm sober, because now I realize when I learned about myself, when I got to know me, doing the steps, especially doing that fourth and fifth step, and reflecting, I understood that he may have not been able to express himself, not in words, but I remember as a little kid, he used to go to lunch, and he always wore a suit and tie, even though he was a shipping clerk in a ribbon factory. My mom worked behind a sewing machine for 45 years in the garment district, and before York peppermint patties, they used to have Mason mints, which is the same thing, but they were huge. Mm. And he would have half of his lunch and bring me half. He may not have been able to express how he felt, but he certainly exhibited it by what he did. You know, and he always wanted the best for me. Anyways, I got married, and like I said, I've always worked, and he had said, "She's not good for you." And one of the things they told me when I came back, because I went through a detox, Salvation Army detox, and they used to say, you know what, you can tell a drunk, but you can't tell them much. And that was me, you know. And I told them I can handle it. Well, 16 years later, we were divorced, but I had to get sober to do it. And I had been on a run, and I was that malfunctioning drunk from the tenements in New York City. I had a house, white picket fence, two cars in the driveway, a boat, and a yacht club. And by the way, that yacht club was nothing but a bunch of drunks that got a motor for the rowboat. You know? And I was okay, because here I was, you know. I was doing the right thing. I had my house. I had this. I can't be an alcoholic. And I remember, and I was thinking about it last night, when my son was born, I invited my next door neighbor, and when he came to the house, I offered him a drink. He says, "I don't drink, I'm an alcoholic. But God knows I wouldn't touch that." You know, okay, it's okay. But later that seed was planted. That seed was definitely planted. And I got involved in stuff that, you know, I would have never done sober. A friend invited me to go to New Jersey to the container ship port. And little did I know that the packages that we were bringing back, there were ceramic elephants that stood about that big, and people would use them as end tables. They were hollow, but they weren't empty. And I didn't know that. But here I could have been Bubba's bedmate, you know, federal crime, transporting, you know, agricultural products across state lines. And I didn't even smoke it. I didn't sell it. I had nothing to do with it. I was just the idiot in the passenger seat, you know, and God was looking out for me, unbelievably. And, you know, inevitably, fast forward, I grew to hate myself. If I could crawl out of my own skin and throw it away, I would. I couldn't look in the mirror. And I would be gone for days and come back. You know, and I didn't know how to be a husband, father, but I also didn't know that she had issues herself. And she probably married me to get out of the situation where she was. And I was accused of, the worst thing you could tell me was, all men are the same. That would just burn my butt. And I was called sick and perverted, and inevitably I was told that I could be potentially a child molester with my own son. But I couldn't see the forest for the trees. Today I understand that maybe she was molested or abused, and I would have never rejected her, but she never confided in me. And anyways, I got to the point where I thought the only solution to the insanity, because if you had put me in a rubber room in an institution, I would have felt quite comfortable. I didn't know I was an alcoholic. I didn't know what an alcoholic meant. And it came to the point where I knew I was an alcoholic. I'd tell the guy at the bar, I'm an alcoholic, man. But I didn't have a solution. I didn't know what to do. And, you know, by the grace of God, I had a good job, and I'll never forget it. I woke up on a Friday morning, and I drove myself to the Salvation Army Hospital, because I knew if I stayed on the streets, I'd probably take my own life. That's where I was at. I hated myself, the things that I had done. You know, our literature talks about being angry enough to murder. Mm-hmm. I was there with the rifle loaded, cocked, and I was going to blow somebody away. And one of the guys that I used to run with knocked me on my ass and said, you want to take him out and beat him? Fine, but you're not going to shoot him. And you know, I got into situations that were quite hilarious. Because I left that yacht club one day and I was driving somewhere. And believe it or not, a motorcycle ran a stop sign and I hit him. And next thing I know, the cops are there. And that whole precinct used to hide their vehicles behind my yacht club and drink for free. So when the cop came up and said, get out of the car, I went like, oh, do I have to? I said, what are you doing here? He goes, what do you mean? This is Bobby Long's beat. You know Bobby Long? I said, yeah, he's at the yacht club. He's drunker than I am. And he said, get back in the car and shut up. And it's the only reason that I didn't get arrested that night, because the beat cop was drunker than I was. You know, and I believe that my higher power has a sense of humor, and I'm usually the object of it. You know, and it's been that way for a long time. Anyway, I wake up after a run, and I drove myself, and I didn't have to convince the Salvation Army that I was an alcoholic, because the intake nurse said, "What the hell have you been drinking?" And up to the detox, and. It was hilarious because I didn't know anything about detoxes. They take me up, there's one room that looks like a hospital room, the rest of them look like a motel. And the first night, you're in the hospital room. And the nurse said, okay, let's drop our pants and jump into bed. And I said, ooh, let's. She said, oh no, and she pulls out this big hypodermic needle and I got it, yes. 5 days later, I get out of there. And back then, the old timers used to use the term mocus in a fog. And that's where I was. I made my first meeting 2 hours after getting out of detox. And I was such in a fog, I couldn't concentrate. I couldn't listen. And I thought you guys were nuts because I said, I just got out of detox. And they were cheering and applauding. And I was like, people are crazy. And I made a few meetings and I got away from the rooms. And I didn't want to drink. I had had enough. I knew that I had had enough. And I got away, and I didn't know what alcoholism really is. And it's the I, the self, and the me, the isms. And for 2 years, I didn't have a drink, but I can tell you that I was still angry. I was, you know, crazy. I was that sober horse thief. You know what happens when you sober up a horse thief? You got a sober horse thief. P.S. I was still doing the same thing that I was doing. I just wasn't drinking. And when I hit an emotional bottom 2 years after that, I went to a counselor at work, and he said, "Don't drink, go to meetings." And I said a few choice words to him, and I said, "You're an idiot. I haven't had a drink in 2 years." And he just kept repeating that phrase. Don't ask me why I asked for a meeting list, but I did. And I remember it was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and the only meeting available was like three counties over. And I'll never forget it. Didn't know where that meeting was, but I knew the general area. And I get off the highway, and there's a road crew, and I ask them where it is, and they pointed me in the right direction. And I can tell you that I walked into this meeting, and I was like the moon in the middle of the night, because I was the only light-skinned one. And I was welcomed. And I broke down, and this lady came over to me, gave me a big hug, and she was a prison guard. And we talked for a while. And I made my to-be home group the very next day. But again, you know, not taking suggestions, not doing the right things, not getting a sponsor. I was going to meetings, and I just wasn't drinking. And inevitably, and they say it's a disease of the attitudes, I picked up a drink. And that's all it was a drink. But it scared the living hell out of me. I didn't want to go back to where I came from. It really scared the living hell out of me. And the next day, coincidentally, they needed somebody to make coffee. And of course, my hand went up, and it was 2 100-cup pots, Tuesdays and Thursdays. I'll never forget it. And they told me, "And you have to shake everybody's hand that comes through that door." I say, "What?" And I did. And another thing that I learned in that short period of time was that it doesn't matter how much time you got, you've always got something to give. Because I was shaking hands, and this big guy comes in, looks like a football player, looked like he was angry, and I extended my hand and I said, "Welcome to the keynote group." He took my hand, but he still had that scowl and walked away, and I said, "What the hell's wrong with this guy?" Well, the next night I went to a meeting, and he walked up to me and he said, "Thank you for welcoming me. It was my first time in AA. Nobody welcomed me, but you shook my hand." And that's what I learned, that no matter how much time you've got, you always got something to give. Well, after picking up that drink, I took suggestions, I got a sponsor, I got involved. And I said, "God has a sense of humor." I got my first sponsor was the biggest, ugliest biker you ever saw. And he said, "Do I detect fear?" I will not repeat what I told him. And I'm lucky he didn't kick my ass. But he was great. He said, "You will be of maximum service to the fellowship and your fellow man." And he had me going to jails, institutions, you name it. I was doing it. Service was all about. And you know what? I had been seeking stuff all through my life. I went and bought a book, and I just remembered it last night, called The Prophet by Khalil Gibran. And it was about spirituality and deity. And I had been searching. Well, I like to fish. I used to drive 140 miles to this little town, and on the water was a whaling village. And I'd fish and run back into Harlem to sell the fish. And we would make some good money. But as you leave the harbor, there's a big long jetty. And I love walking on jetties and looking in the water. I just love doing it. And I looked up at the house where the jetty was connected to the land. And I said, nah, those millionaires wouldn't want the likes of me on their property. My sponsor got me involved in a retreat with Matt Talbot. And that was October of 1985. And I checked in, and it was an old whaling captain's house. And the guy said, why don't you go outside? We're on the water. Okay. I step out this back door, beautiful circular porch with the tall columns. And what's there with the jetty? Tell me God didn't have a plan for me, you know? And even worse than that, the guy that was leading the retreat was a priest who was an alcoholic, and he was the pastor of my church when I was in grammar school. And, you know, that's a lot of the stuff that I've been reflecting on since David asked me to speak, you know, all the things that I've been through. I had a son, and I had a good relationship with him. I loved my son. But my marriage, unfortunately, was down the toilet. And I finally just gave up the house, the property, you name it, the cars, the bank accounts, because I couldn't live like that anymore. I probably would have drank. When they told me, you know, you gotta get rid of the people, places, and things, and unfortunately, she was one of them. And the thing was that all the old timers just gave me stuff that I can't forget and I can't believe, because they told me, you know, we know you better than you know yourself. Let us love you until you can love yourself. You know, and I had to believe in something. And I had an old timer who helped me with the third step. And I knew there was a God, but I felt that I was going to die a drunk and burn in hell. There was no two ways about it. And this old timer helped me with the third step. And I started to understand that he told me personalize that higher power. You know, and it's hilarious because I figured, you know what, I'll call him Ralph. My higher power is Ralph. And my second home group was a step group. And there was a priest in there who was an alcoholic. Well, he was hilarious. He says, I can't hang out with you anymore. I said, why not? He says, I was on the pulpit giving my sermon and I almost said Ralph. And you know, I met my second wife in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I couldn't believe the relationship that I had sober, and we loved each other, and we had such great relationships. I didn't have the property, I didn't have the houses, nothing. We lived in a basement apartment, and you know what's wrong with a basement apartment? You can't commit suicide, the windows are too high. And but I loved it. You know, we had a fantastic relationship. And she was also in Alcoholics Anonymous. She was also in the rooms. And I was never happier. You know, it wasn't about things. It was about holding hands at the table and saying grace. It was about having a friendship, not just a marriage. And I was involved, you know, in meetings and service, you name it. Just before our third anniversary, she was diagnosed with cancer and given 30 days to live. And I remember just before they did a tracheotomy, I said, you know, if you're not going to be around, there's no reason for me to be alive. Because this was a gift that I had had. And she said, don't go crazy, don't go back to your ex-wife, and God will put somebody good in your life again. And you people carried me through that time until her death. And you carried me through all the pain, He came to my apartment at 2 o'clock in the morning to hold me like a baby and let me cry. And my spirituality and my belief in that higher power continued to grow. You know, and I got involved in service. I got out of myself. And, you know, it was unbelievable. At the same time, you know, one of the things I didn't lose was my job. And I started to accelerate. I started to go up. I worked for the New York City Transit Authority as an electrician. And inevitably, I worked up into middle management. And I ran all the troubleshooting crews for power production for New York City for the subways. And it was beyond me that I've done that. But it was because of the people who gave me so much confidence, gave me so much support, gave me so much love. And the old timer that the only one that I trusted was a little old Jewish guy from Brooklyn. And I loved him to death. He would say, "Hey kid, it's about love and Sidus." You know, talked in Brooklynese. And I remember going to his 33rd anniversary. And he went up to the podium like this here, grabbed hold of the podium, and took a massive stroke right on it at his anniversary. They carted him off in the ambulance and went through a lot of stuff. And up there, there's a lot of basement meetings, so we would take his wheelchair and carry it down. He went from a wheelchair to walkers to crutches, canes. And the only thing that man, and he taught me, that the only thing that man was heard to say was, "Thank God for another challenge." That guy that held me at 2 o'clock in the morning, David, he was also duly addicted. He had had some history with intravenous drugs. So he was HIV positive. He contracted Hodgkin's disease and couldn't fight the chemo. And the day before he died, I was at the hospital with him. And he said, "Carlos, I can't be like this." And I said, "What's the matter, David?" "When they give me my drugs, I'm thinking about getting off, and I can't think like that anymore." What did it matter? He was going to die in the next day. But that's what sobriety meant to him. That he couldn't think in those terms. You know, and God has put people in my life that taught me, because I became willing. I became teachable. And that big biker got me into service, and you know, I've been doing service ever since. Miraculous things happen. My sponsor had me start a beginners group at an outreach center, Father Costello's outreach. And I turned it over to a sponsee after a while. Fast forward, my son gets arrested for being stupid. A 15-year-old drives up and says, "Let's go for a ride." You think he's got a license? Especially in New York City, where it's 18. You think his dad bought him that car? Well, I went to the district attorney in Queens and told him, "Yeah, I'm a recovering alcoholic. I only get my son one weekend a month. And, you know, any structure I put into his life gets destroyed when he goes home." And he couldn't believe it, but again, my son had good grades. You know, he had never been in trouble before. So the DA said, we're gonna have his hearing in my office. And it was uncanny, because he spoke to my son, he spoke to me, he spoke to my wife, my ex-wife, and you can't make this stuff up. He said, "Warren, we're remanding you to Father Costello's outreach for drug and alcohol awareness ministry," and I never told him my involvement with that place. If that's not God working in my life, nobody is. You know, and inevitably I got a call, "I can't handle him, you take him." And I got custody of my son. You know, He'll be 52 next month. I was just 77, mid-July. And, you know, my life has been unbelievable. I can't give back enough for what I've gotten in the fellowship. You know, and who would have thought? Because I'm the kid that got out of the Navy here in Norfolk in 1968 and said, I ain't never going back to that bleep, 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 bleep. And here I am. And I do a lot of volunteering in the community. I do a charity called Wish a Fish for kids with disabilities and their families. I use my boat as a safety boat for Harbor Fest. And like I said, God has a sense of humor, and I'm usually the object of it. As I'm working Harbor Fest, the guy that coordinated all the safety boats was commanding officer at the Small Boat Expeditionary Training Center in Little Creek and said, you want to work in a marina? I go, boats, fishing, marina? Sure. Why not? Well, little did I know, on a naval base at Little Creek. And inevitably, one of the guys that I fished with became commanding officer of the base. And I got a reaction from him that I still laugh at. Because I said, you know why I'm here, Frank? And he goes, no, why are you here? I said, because God wanted me to make amends to the Navy for my drunken screw-ups when I was in the Navy. And while I was there, I started a Wounded Warrior event. And you know, it's just what I do. It's just what I've been taught when I first came in, to get out of myself. Because if you're hurting, grab somebody that's hurting more than you. That's what I was taught. You know, and I do that today, regardless. You know, just before my wife passed away, that priest that was in my home group came to the hospital. He was the only one that I could think of to call. And I hadn't been to church, and you know, didn't think I was worthy of it. And he came to the hospital. He spoke to both of us. And then he gave us what they call general absolution, or forgiveness for your sins. And that's when I said, you know, if God can forgive you, why can't you forgive yourself? And that's when my life started to take a change. And I talked about in the literature about going back to the practice of the faith of your youth. And I've done that today, although some people got to be crazy, because I was in my church a year and a half, and he nominated me to be a consultant to the pastor. And I was like, they know who the hell I am? And it's hilarious. You know, and I've been involved in my church. Now I work security. And I tell my pastor, nobody's going to mess with our service. What makes you so different than the other services? You got a Puerto Rican from East Harlem, you got a retired Navy SEAL, and two crazy Filipinos. who's gonna come in here and start some stuff, you know? And you know, we need it. Because, you know, you're aware of the stuff that goes on around the world and this country and the insanity of it. But by the grace of God, we're trained by the Virginia Beach Police. They have a special program, which I love. And you know what? It's like Alcoholics Anonymous. It's my family. The people in that church are my family, and I love it. And you know, you people have given me a direction that I never knew I would have. I've remarried, and like I said, God has worked when I didn't even know it, has worked in my life. I remember with my ex-wife, so for some ungodly reason, I thought, hey, how about if we adopt? I wanted to give a kid a break. And she said, what, you can't make your own kids? I said, obviously we have one, but I'm not smart enough to stay out of marriage, so I married again. And we just celebrated 30 years and renewed our vows in church again. But the greatest thing was that my wife couldn't have kids, so she adopted a kid from Brazil and got him on his first birthday. And today, you know, I got him when he was 5. Today he's 42. And a combat veteran of Iraq, Afghanistan. And he's got PTSD, but he's doing well, and he's got God in his life, and he thanked me for making him go to church. He thanked me for helping him to get God in his life, and I couldn't believe it. You know, it's just because of what you people taught me, that I'm worth it, because I never thought I was. You know, and today I will extend my hand to anyone, anywhere, so it doesn't matter, in or out of the rooms. It's what my sponsor taught me. And what they said, the only thing we're going to guarantee you is if you don't drink a day at a time, you'll stay sober. But if you stay sober, you got a good chance of being a decent human being. And that's what I am today. Nothing special. I'm just a banana, one of the bunch. You know, and that's because you guys have been there for me. Whether you realize it or not, Alcoholics Anonymous, the fellowship is my family. I couldn't think of any other way to live, you know. And I believe in the steps, I believe in the traditions to ensure, because my sponsor taught me, the steps will save you from yourself. Tradition saves AA from you. Mm-hmm. And you know what? That's exactly how it works. It's not complicated. We're just complicated people that can screw up. It's simple. It's simple, but it's more than just not drinking. It's about living. It's about doing the next right thing. It's about being teachable, being open, and being honest. And thank you for asking me, because this last week I've been thinking about it. It was emotional for me. And if anything, it brought up so much gratitude in my heart for being sober, for having the God that took care of this idiot, and for the love and the friendship that I have today. I never had it. Thank you.
Thank you.